Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. I just landed this morning from Tel Aviv. having spoken last night in Tel Aviv in front of several hundred people, and went straight to the airport and got in around 6 o'clock this morning. So if I look a little tired, you'll understand why. It was an amazing, just quick 4-day trip to Israel. I saw the Prime Minister of Israel, the President of Israel, the head of the Mossad. I lectured at the military college to leading military people. And of course, more importantly, I spoke to average Israelis. I went down and saw the area where the horrible massacres, rapes, beheadings took place. And anybody who's been down there can't begin to understand, and certainly can't begin to deny. A woman named Vivian Silver, a 74-year-old woman, was burned to death by people from Gaza. We don't know whether they were Hamas or ordinary citizens, who came to her own home in a kibbutz and burned her to death. These may have been some of the same people who she helped on a regular basis. She went to Gaza and she took them out and took sick people to hospitals and saved a lot of lives. And yet the same people killed her. We don't know what happened to her before she was killed, but we know that she was burned to death and burned alive. And it was just horrible. I met with relatives of people who are still missing, etc. I just wanted to give you, before I get to Trump and the gag order, which is the main focus of this podcast, I wanted to just show you a short video that I made. Elon, my son, was with me. He took the video at the location, the Nova Film Music Festival, where close to 400 people, were mostly young kids, were murdered in cold blood and raped. So here's what I saw when I went there. It's tough to see.
I'm at the scene of one of the worst massacres in Jewish history since the Holocaust. This is the Nova Music Festival, which was a peace festival, a place that people came from all over Israel to celebrate peace and to try to make peace with the people of Gaza. Most of the people who came here favored the two-state solution and peace with Gaza, and close to 400 of them were murdered in cold blood. 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, when they were waking up to sunrise to sing music. Hamas came over the border and shot and killed everybody they could get their hands on, raped women, mutilated bodies, beheaded a young man. I met with the young man's father. Hamas beheaded him and took his head back to Gaza and put it on sale for $10,000. Fortunately, the Israeli Mossad rescued the head, and it was allowed to be buried with his the rest of the body. And if you look around, these are all memorials to the young people who died here. This is your children. This is your nephew and niece. This is your brother. This is everybody. And the world has so quickly forgotten and has so quickly failed to understand what happens when you allow terrorism to prevail and to win. This is not only a memorial to the death of the Israelis who died here. This is a memorial to Western civilization and to decency. It's hard to keep it together when you're here, because you know how much blood was shed here, innocent blood, and the world so quickly forgets.
One thing that was made clear to me, both by me and by my son Elon making this point to me very, very thoughtfully, we met a lot of young 18, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds in Israel, men and women, and they were all in soldiers' uniforms. They were all fighting for Israel's survival. Young 19-year-old women carrying weapons to protect themselves and to protect Israel. And I compare them to the Nazi Hitler youth, these 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old useful idiots who march for Hamas in the United States, who have no idea what's going on in Israel, who are supporting rapists and murderers and brutalizers. The comparison was so shocking to see these young people who just volunteer to go in and do what they can to help save civilization, compared to these young idiots who have no idea what they're doing, who don't know what river and what sea they're saying there should be no Israel. It's just amazing. And the resilience that Israelis have, you know, they're very divided about who their leader should be, but they're completely united in the need to destroy Hamas. I would say every Israeli we met, every single one of them in the polls support this, support Israel's IDF going into Rafah, trying to minimize civilian casualties, trying to avoid killing human shields, but getting Sinwar, getting the leaders of Hamas and making them surrender unequivocally the way the United States did to the Germany and Imperial Japan. This can only end with total victory and total surrender by Hamas. If Hamas in any way survives, it will be doing it again. You know, I used to always say it's coming to a theater near you. And of course, that's what happened in Moscow. It came to a theater near Putin. Believe it or not, Hamas communicated with Putin and sent its condolences for the terrorist attack that killed 130 people in a theater outside of Moscow. What Putin may not realize is that the reason for the terrorist attack in Russia is they emulated Hamas and the Palestinian terrorists, the PLO. They invented mass casualty terrorism as a way of achieving their ends. And it came to a theater near Putin, and it's going to come to a theater near you and near me if it's not stopped in its tracks. All right, let's turn from this very difficult issue. And it really, you know, got to me emotionally, and got to me as I spoke to the head of the Mossad, and he gave me interesting insights into what's really going on. Let me just make one more point about that. Everybody I spoke to in Israel, and I'm talking about real experts, have come to the same conclusion. There is no famine in Gaza. It is a lie. It is a blood libel. Israel is not trying to starve the people of Gaza. Nobody has died of starvation. It's a myth. People have died because they're sick. But there's enough food. There's more than enough food. You can see videotapes of food stalls selling fresh food, fresh vegetables. There's more than enough food to go around. The problem is it's not being properly allocated. It's being stolen by Hamas. Recently, the IDF found barrels and barrels of grain, and the people are short of grain. Yeah, there's hunger. People aren't getting three squares a day, but nobody is starving to death. That's a lie. Even the UN has said maybe famine will come in June. That's after Hamas said in October, November, December, January, February, March, cried wolf and said there was a famine. There was a famine. People were dying of starvation. It never happened. It's made up. And I wish people would look at the evidence and look at the facts instead of listening to CNN. All right, let's turn to Donald Trump. A little bit of background. For the second time, a court has ordered Trump to be subject to what I regard as an unconstitutional prior restraint, a gag order, limiting what he could say. He can attack Bragg because he's an elected DA, but he can't attack assistant district attorneys, and he can't attack other people. He can't attack the witnesses who may be lying against him. But just a little bit of history. Our country was founded on the premise that prior restraint is almost never, ever constitutional. Sure, if you have somebody who's about to print the names of spies who might be killed, that's an extraordinary exception. But there are very few other exceptions to that. Normally, you just have to tolerate the bad speech. And if it's illegal, prosecute them afterward. But prior restraint is an anathema to the Constitution. I was one of the lawyers in the Pentagon Papers case, where the United States government came before the Supreme Court. I remember it as if it was yesterday, came before the United States Supreme Court and represented as the government to the United States Supreme Court, to the nine justices. It was Irwin Griswold, my former dean at Harvard Law School, who stood up before the Supreme Court and predicted that if the Pentagon Papers were allowed to be published, there would be terrible, terrible consequences for spies, for American foreign policy. Basically, he said the nation would fall, and therefore prior restraint was permissible under the First Amendment. The justices rejected that and said, no, even though you claim the nation would fall, prior restraint is not permissible under our Constitution. Then, of course, you know what happened. The Pentagon Papers were published. I represented Senator Gravel, who published them on the floor of the Senate. The Pentagon Papers were published. Not a single spy was exposed. Nothing negative happened to American foreign policy. It actually turned out to be good for America because it taught us what the reasons were for going into Vietnam, and it made it easier for us to get out of Vietnam. You know, sunlight is the best disinfectant, and the publication of the Pentagon Papers, boring as could be, I had to read through them all because I was representing, you know, Senator Gravel, who had published them. Boring as could be, I tell you, I did it pro bono, but I earned my money because it was terrible, terribly boring. But the principle was extremely important. The Washington Post and the New York Times published the Pentagon Papers because the Supreme Court said you cannot impose prior restraint. They also said that if there's any damage done, maybe there could be criminal prosecutions after the fact of the editors in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Yet notwithstanding that, the editors and the publishers decided to go forward and publish the Pentagon Papers in both of those newspapers and in other places. Beacon Press published them as well as the Senator Gravel edition of the Pentagon Papers. That's the version that I read and represented. With that in mind, how do you justify any prior restraint in a ridiculous criminal case like this? First of all, this is the dumbest, most absurd criminal case I've ever seen against Donald Trump. They all are, but this is the absolute worst. This is one of the reasons I entitled my book Get Trump, because what Alvin Bragg did was stretch the law beyond any recognition. It took a state misdemeanor and a state felony and a federal misdemeanor and a federal felony, and the federal government, which had primary jurisdiction over elections, didn't prosecute. But the state decided that, you know, one and one equals what? Who knows? But they put together the state misdemeanor and the federal misdemeanor, and lo and behold, they created a federal felony under which Alexander Hamilton probably could have been prosecuted. He, too, had an affair. Now, Trump denies the affair, but let's assume it's true for purposes of this argument. In Hamilton's case, it was true. He had an affair with a married woman. It was a setup. The husband had arranged it so that he could extort him. Hamilton paid the extortion money, paid a fortune by those standards. And he didn't report it anywhere. I mean, he tried to keep it secret. Ultimately, it was revealed by one of Jefferson's lackeys who was playing dirty pool. And Hamilton wrote a pamphlet about it. I have an original copy of it in my collection, in which he admitted the affair, admitted the adultery. And adultery, by the way, was a serious felony back in the day. You could get, you know, years in prison for it. He admitted it, admitted the adultery, but denied that he had paid the extortion out of Federal Treasury Department funds, which was the accusation against him. And he was right. I mean, he did commit the felony of adultery, but he didn't take the money. Ironically, where did he get the money? He got it from his wife, against whom he committed adultery. I don't know. The record doesn't reveal whether or not his wife actually knew that he was using her money to pay hush money to somebody's husband with whom he was having an affair. You know, the case is an absurd one. It should never have been brought. It should be dropped. If it were anywhere but New York, there'd be an acquittal. But in New York, a New York jury will convict the ham sandwich. By the way, part of the gag order is he can't attack New York jurors. I attack New York jurors all the time when it comes to Trump. I don't think a New York jury could give Trump a fair trial. This is America. Everybody should have the right to say whatever they please about any official government act, particularly a criminal prosecution. And there's just no reason for prior restraint. He's not allowed to attack witnesses. Why not? Cohen, he believes, lied. And why shouldn't he be able to say he lied? Look, there are so many other remedies that can be used. If you think the jury pool is tainted, get new jurors. If you think that you need a postponement, get a postponement. If you need to change venue, change the venue. But the last thing you should do is impose a constraint on speech, a prior restraint on speech. Remember another thing that people forget: Trump is presumed innocent. Yeah, actually, he's even Trump is entitled to a presumption of innocence. So what is the court doing? It's telling an innocent man that he can't defend himself in the court of public opinion, or at least his hands are tied, and one hand is tied behind his back, when everybody knows that this is a political case. Everybody knows nobody would ever be charged with anything like that. You know how many times hush money has been paid and it hasn't been disclosed on private corporate forms? Nobody would dream of going after anybody if his name wasn't Donald Trump and if he wasn't running for president on the Republican Party, and if he wasn't leading in the polls. And so this is a political case, and Trump has the right to respond to it politically. He has the right to use it to his advantage. He has the right to defend himself in the court of public opinion. And there are remedies that courts can take, but not prior restraint to free speech. Because, you know, it's Trump today. It's, you know, your uncle tomorrow. It's you the next day. The idea that you can use Trump, you know, it was H.L. Mencken who once said, the reason civil libertarians have to defend SOBs, it's even though we don't like it and it's difficult, it's because the bad guys come after the SOBs first, establish the legal principle on the SOBs, and then use it against the rest of us. That's certainly been my experience over time in representing a lot of SOBs, a lot of bad people, that the government tries to establish the principles on the back of bad people so it can then use them against its political enemies, good and bad. And that's why it's so important to fight back and defend people, even if you don't like them, if you don't approve of them, certainly if you don't vote for them. I have many, many, many of my clients I would never vote for. Many of my clients I would never have dinner with. I would just represent them the way a doctor performs surgery on a patient. I'm a pretty good lawyer, and I would hope that a pretty good surgeon would do as good a job as possible without regard to the politics. It's so interesting. People say political views. We have a shade in our house that doesn't work. Some company put up the shade, and it was a negligent company. It was a terrible company, and the shade didn't work. And when my wife called, they said, oh, you're married to Alan Dershowitz. If we knew that these shades were for Alan Dershowitz, we never, ever would have provided them. I wish they knew it had been for Alan Dershowitz. I wish they hadn't provided them, because it's an incompetent company that put up the shades incompetently. But, I mean, it goes so far in America today. They won't put up shades for me because they don't like my politics, or they don't like who I represent. And nobody likes who I represent. You know, people on one side love it when I represent particular people on their side, hate it when I represent people on the other side, and vice versa. So, you know, that's the world world we live in today. But the best answer to that world is complete and total free speech. Where is the ACLU on these gag orders? Where are liberal Democrats on these gag orders? For the most part, they don't care. It's free speech for me, but not for thee, and certainly not for Donald Trump. Oh my God, free speech for Donald Trump. Next thing you'll be asking for due process for Donald Trump, or a fair trial, or a trial in a venue where maybe he can get fair justice. Oh my God, what'll happen to our legal system if we actually allow Donald Trump to have a fair trial? That's what's really going on. That's why I wrote my book, Get Trump. That's why, although I'm not a Republican and I'm not a political supporter of Donald Trump, I support as vigorously as if he were a friend or on my side of the political aisle. I do it as strongly and as effectively, hopefully, as I would do for anybody else. You just can't let your politics, your personal views, influence how you defend somebody. That's true of lawyers, that's extra true of courts, and it should be true of juries, but it's not. And so my predictions here again today, Trump is not going to get a fair trial. He may very well be convicted in New York of a non-crime. It'll be reversed on appeal, very likely, but that will happen after the election. And so what you have is what was intended by the DA, election interference. And don't believe me, listen to Jack Smith. Jack Smith has said in court documents, that he wants to speed up these trials because he thinks the American public has the right to have a conviction before the election. No, no. Cases should go along the normal course of events. There shouldn't be rushes. Cases like this usually take more than a year to bring to trial. There shouldn't be an attempt to try to bring them to trial quickly so as to influence the election one way or the other. That does constitute, in effect, if not, well, it is intended, election interference. The attempt is to try to have an impact on the election. And we've seen it happen in many contexts. We saw it happen with Hillary Clinton, when the head of the FBI issued a statement, Comey, saying that he wasn't going to charge her with a crime, but what she did was terrible. That may, who knows, may have had an impact on the 2016 election. The legal system should not be influencing political votes in the United States. So far, the Supreme Court has done the right thing in the Colorado case. Be interesting to see what they do in the immunity case. You know my prediction that both sides asked for measures that were too extreme and that the Supreme Court should and possibly will split the difference and articulate a rule that presidents do have limited immunity for things they did which were within the scope of their presidency during their presidency, and that the immunity extends to a time beyond their presidency. Otherwise, it makes no sense. If you can't be charged when you're the president for doing something, but you can be charged the day you leave, obviously it will have a chilling impact on whether or not the president acts in the way he believes he should have acted. So we'll wait and see what the immunity case does. We'll wait and see what these other cases. It's interesting that there was no gag order on Fannie Willis. She went in front of a black church while there was an indictment pending, and she made statements clearly intended to influence the jury, particularly black jurors. And she played the race card, and she was criticized by the judge. But the judge didn't impose a gag order on her, didn't impose prior restraint. What she did is far, far more dangerous than anything Donald Trump is accused of doing. And so that's the other problem with gag orders. They're selectively applied. Yes to Donald Trump, no to Fannie Willis. Yes to some people, no to others. That's not the way the American system should operate. And so we'll wait and see what happens. We'll wait and see if this gag order is challenged. It could be challenged in two ways. One, some kind of an appeal could be taken. And second, Trump could simply violate it and then be fined. And see whether he or not he can appeal that fine. Okay, so let's go to some letters. This is an interesting one. Professor, many of us would like to know why you will not vote for RFK Jr. We value your words and opinions. We listen to you every day. I understand privacy, and please forgive the query. If you previously addressed it, I did not hear. No, I didn't previously address it. And of course, things have changed a little bit now that RFK Jr. Has picked his running mate, the former wife of Sergey Brin, the founder of Google, in her own right, a very, very, very wealthy woman. So the question is, why can't I vote for RFK Jr.? Well, let me start out by saying I could vote for him. He's not my first choice because I have some questions about the extent of the statements he's made about vaccines. Now, you know, I debated him. You can find the debate on YouTube. It was over an hour long. It was a very good, thorough debate, and he did a very good job. I'm not going to tell you I won the debate. I think the debate was essentially a tie. We both made our points, but he knew everything possible about vaccines, about big pharma. I have a lot of respect for that. We disagree. There's some new data coming out supporting his side somewhat. I still think that when in doubt, you inoculate and you don't compel it unless it's something like a major epidemic as happened during the Revolutionary War, where George Washington did compel the vaccination of his troops. That's what gives me some hope. I like RFK Jr. He's not a friend. He's an acquaintance. I've known him for years. We've played volleyball together. Boy, he's a really good volleyball player, extremely aggressive. And we've had long conversations. I've given him advice about the Middle East. He's accepted a lot of that advice, and he's been very strong on the Middle East issue. He is a civil libertarian and environmentalist, as am I. So I don't preclude the possibility of voting for him. I've never voted for a third party candidate before, but he's up in the polls. He has 13% nationally, and in Michigan, he's up above 20%. So he clearly could be a spoiler. Could he actually win? Well, you know, the law. If he prevents either of the major candidates from getting a majority of the electoral votes, it goes to the House of Representatives, where each state casts one vote. So, you know, Wyoming has as much power as California, and that would pretty much assure a Republican victory. So he could be a spoiler. I don't see how he could get a plurality or a majority. You need a majority of the votes. He's so far only on the ballot in a few states. Now, with his wealthy running mate, he will probably get on the ballot of more states. She seems quite qualified by her business ventures. You know, she's not political, but and he is, of course, although he's never run for office. But he has been involved in politics since he's been a child. Okay, this is interesting. It's amazing how many people think Dershowitz is a Democrat. No, Dershowitz is a passionate Trump supporter. Trump is his personal hero. Well, where do you get this stuff? Where do you get this stuff? I've never voted Republican for a president in my life. I have no intent to vote for a Republican this time around. And I'm not a Trump supporter. He's not my personal hero. I wish he were better behaved. And I wish he could control what he says and what he does. Even if I ever were to vote for him, and nothing's beyond the realm of possibility, he would be far from my personal hero. He would be an alternative, and an alternative is somebody you think about. But no, he's not my personal hero. Professor, what if Biden would have put conditions on arms to Israel? Would that cross the line? Yes, particularly if they were unreasonable lines. Obviously, if he says you can't use your weapons to commit war crimes, sure, that's okay. But Israel isn't committing war crimes. It's conducting itself far more with far greater concern for civilian life than any other country. Richard Kemp, the former commander of NATO forces has said that. Other generals have said the same thing. People who really know have commended Israel for its restraint in using tactics that might endanger the lives of civilians. Okay. This is one about me and the Democrats. When you've lost Dershowitz, you're done. Well, first, they haven't lost me. Second of all, I wish I were that powerful. I am not. And so the Democrats can win even without me, although if I abandon them, I will work hard to see that they don't win. I support my views and I support them firmly. This must be very painful for you, but this is not the Democratic Party anymore. They moved hard left. Scary what they represent today. I agree with you. This is not my Democratic Party from 1960 to the Bill Clinton era or even Bush versus Gore. This is not my Democratic Party. I think the Democratic Party left me during Obama's second term. I wish I hadn't voted for Obama for the second term. I did. I regret it. I should have voted for Romney. He was a better candidate. He would have made a better president. But I made a mistake, and I'm here to admit it. Why does American Jewry consistently vote left? Well, not always. And there's been a movement. Jews are not a group. They're individuals, and individuals have different priorities. And my point to the Democratic and the Republican Party is don't take Jewish votes for granted. Don't take pro-Israel votes for granted. Earn our votes. And I'm waiting to hear which party and which candidate earns my vote. See you next week.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.